First, we need to have a brief overview just of Dinim Darabanan themselves, and then we can look at how they impact on Shabbos specifically. So there is a major machlokas that is somewhat well known about where the power of Chazal really comes from. And the Rambam has the view, which he expresses in a few places, that the Pasuk in Parashat Shoftim, Lo Saser, that we're told that when we have a question and we bring it to the rabbinic authority at that time, whoever it's going to be, and the Torah says, do not deviate, Lo Saser, that is inclusive not only of their psak on whatever issue you would ask about, but in any new legislation also. Anything that Chazal add on is also included in Lo Saser. It's also obligatory on us because of that. And the Ramban disagreed for a number of reasons. Stam it's a chiddush in the pasuk. I can't speak for Canada, but in America, you know, so we have different branches of the government. We have a judiciary and we have a legislature, which are necessarily separate and distinct from each other. So it's not obvious when you're talking about judiciary authority, which was the context in the Torah, that the Chazal, the rabbinic leadership, whoever they are, have the authority to tell you what the Torah means. Okay, so that's clear. But the idea that that should also include legislative authority, that they can say new ideas, that they also think that this would be a good idea too, and that's also binding, that's not so obvious. That was a chiddush of the Rambam. And the Ramban had a number of objections, a lot of them revolving around the fact that we treat Dinim Darabanan and Dinim Daraisa differently. That we're Mekel, most famously, and many other halachas also, but we say Safek Darabanan Lakula, most prominently, that we're more lenient by rabbinic law than we are by Torah law. So why can we do that if it's all Torah law, if it's all included in Lo Saser? What right do we have to make a distinction? So the Ramban disagreed, and there's a lot of discussion how to explain the Rambam's position in light of the Ramban's questions, not all of which we'll have time for right now. It's also of note that 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, we read Parshas Achrimos, and the Parsha ends, Ushmartim es Mishmarti, that we have to protect God's mishmeres. So the Gemara says, Nivamos asu mishmeres l'mishmarti, that we are told to make a safeguard for God's prohibitions. That's what a mishmeres normally is. So how do these two concepts interact? So I think it seems pretty straightforward that essentially within the Rambam's position, they're addressing two different halves of the equation. That the Rambam is telling you with Lo Saser, that's where rabbinic authority comes from. That's why we have to listen to them when they make an enactment. And Asu Mishmeres Mishmarti, that is the general notion that it is important to create protective measures from the Torah. Whether you are an individual who's concerned about his own temptations and should make whatever safeguards are necessary, or whether you are on a communal level, as we find in Shulchan Aruch also, that a kehila can make boundaries for itself, and that is a fulfillment of that idea, or whether it's on a national level, when Chazal are concerned about an issue which could threaten the spiritual well-being of enough of a percentage of the population, and then the power vested in them through Lo Saser allows them to do that on behalf of the whole Tzibur. So it seems like within the Rambam there's a pretty clear designation what each pasuk is coming to do, that one is telling us the power and the other is giving the instruction that this is one way in which that power should be used. In other Sfarim, the distinction is not so clear, and that's something we'll come back to a little bit. But that's all a very, very brief summary of, not even a summary of a summary, of the Rambam. The Ramban, with his objections, so the question that presents itself for the Ramban is, okay, so after you've beaten up the Rambam, so what do you have left? So if you don't accept Lo Saser as a source, so then what is the source? Because the Ramban was a rabbinic Jew, the Ramban observed mitzvahs d'rabbanan. So why do we have to observe mitzvahs d'rabbanan if it's not because of Lo Saser? And as all the later Sfarim point out, the Ramban kind of boxed himself into a corner because he can't just replace it with another pasuk because you'll have the same objections. If his issue is that if it's coming from a pasuk in the Torah, then it can't distinguish between Torah law and rabbinic law, so then that should be true about any pasuk you would pick. You can have the same problems, it would seem. So that's a question that has to be addressed for the Ramban. How exactly do we find that mitzvos derabanan should be binding? Okay, so far so good. Everything clear, more or less? So there are a number of suggestions. Among them is a suggestion that the Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has in his Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, which is printed in a few places. He has essays about concepts of rabbinic law. And he suggests that essentially Chazal were able to perceive what the intent of the Torah is beyond that which is written, because they were so well versed in the actual content of the Torah. So therefore they have a picture of what the overall message is, and they conveyed to us that there are other ideas which may not be spelled out in the Torah but would also be consistent with what the Torah is asking of us. And now that we know them, because Chazal told us that, so as people who love God and serve God, so it makes sense, we should observe these ideas as well. That's one theory within the Ramban. Now, if that theory is correct, it seems to be operating a little bit on a different track than the Siag idea. That's one generalized idea that we try to protect the Torah with safeguards. What the Ramban would be getting at here in this understanding is that there are also other ideas which are not just safeguards. It's that they're inherently something which we should be observing. And here we're not even talking about, let's say, positive ideas like Hanukkah and Purim, which is a whole separate discussion. Where does the authority for new institutions come from within the Torah? But even just while talking about prohibitions, it seems like there are two different kinds of prohibitions, midrabanan. There's that which is protective of the Torah, which the rabbis prohibited something specifically because it's just too likely to trip us up, that it creates some kind of confusion, and we might violate the Torah itself if we don't set up a fence. And then there's an additional idea that certain activities are bad, not just because they are dangerous, what they might lead to, but because if the Torah prohibited X, then probably Y is also in that spirit. And if we really care about the Torah's message, then we're going to avoid Y also. That Y inherently is bad. It just wasn't something the Torah actually spelled out and commanded. And it was up to the rabbis to come and notice that this is something that we should also stay away from. And it's interesting that the Ramban, who doesn't accept Lo Sasser as the source for rabbinic authority, but he does acknowledge that it's an asmachta. He does acknowledge that it's something which connects somehow to this idea, because the Gemara says that much he has to accept. The Gemara says in at least two places that Lo Sasser has a relationship to rabbinic authority, and in one place the language of the Gemara is kol milsa de rabbanan asmachuhu akra de Lo Sasser. That sounds like that there is a connection that the rabbis made to this pasuk of Lo Sasser. So that much the Ramban acknowledges, that there's some relationship between this pasuk and later rabbinic legislation. And he does have two sets. He has that which comes from Lo Sasser and that which comes from Ushmartim es Mishmarti. So again, it could be that we have two kinds of prohibitions. We have prohibitions which keep us away from Yisurim, simply our safeguards, and prohibitions where the Torah says this is bad and we can figure out that something else is probably also bad. Okay, so far so good?
I mean, if there are elements of things in the Torah which are bad, then why weren't they included in the original?
Okay, so that's a fair question. There could be a couple of reasons. It could be that they're not as bad and therefore they were designated for a less weighty prohibition, and there's an inherent difference in Chumrah.
Let's not presume that Chazal are supposed, that the Torah is assuming that somebody's going to come and create these.
Yeah, that's how some understand. It also could mean, like the Ran writes in his Rashos, that there are certain ideas which are more time and context dependent. So the Torah prohibits things eternally, but then there are contexts and there are settings in history where other things become similar to that, and it's up to Chazal to realize that. Now, part of this whole discussion is also the role of Asmachta that we just mentioned a second ago, when the Gemara quotes a pasuk, and really it seems like it's a rabbinic law, so what's the pasuk doing there if it's not a din in the Torah? So most of the Rishonim understand that that's just a memory peg, essentially, that because we had to memorize all of Torah Shebaal Peh, so and everyone knew Torah Shebichsav, and it was written down, so Chazal invoked Pesukim to help us associate the ideas that they were innovating. Not everyone agreed with this. The Ritva, and perhaps a few other Rishonim also, but prominently the Ritva, in his commentary to Rosh Hashanah, said he thought that was a heretical idea. He said that that's not the whole story, but that on some level, this was included in what the Pasuk meant, that this is a part of the Torah's intent, and that Chazal perceived that, and they therefore formalized it as an Isser, but on some level, this was the Kavana Misinai as well. There are different versions or different spins on that idea also. So, for example, if you look at the Meshech Chachma, in his commentary to Chumash on the Pasuk in Shoftim of Lo Sasser, he seems to understand like the Torah was pre-programmed with the notions that Chazal would later come on to, and therefore pre-supported them with the meaning of these Pesukim, a different kind of approach. The Maral of Prague has a very interesting approach to this, where he understands that in Asmachta, he uses the same language as the Ritva, says that people who think there's no real connection between the Pasuk and the idea are totally not getting it at all, and that's a total mistake. He has the same kind of language in saying his position, but it's a little bit different. The way Maral understands it is that the Pesukim, the Torah that Chazal quote, are significant because they teach us about realities of the world that impact why the halacha should be the way it is. And then Chazal, because of that reality which the Pasuk was highlighting, they responded by legislation that acknowledged that. So there's a lot to figure out about what this concept of Asmachta means. It's also relevant to this whole distinction, because it could be that for a siag, a gezera, so that's one general concept all included in Ushmarati, Mishmarati, something like that. We don't need any additional Asmachta for a normal gezera. But these ideas that when the rabbis perceive that there's something else which is negative, without being a safeguard, but it's just inherently bad, so especially if there's an Asmachta, and you say like one of these views, that Asmachta is more than just a later association, but it's something that is inherent in the Pasuk in any one of these different versions, so then all the more so it could be that Chazal perceive that there's a message the Torah is not fully spelling out, but is looking for us to understand, and that that becomes that kind of a din derabanan.
How are these, and from this presentation, right, it would connect sort of conceptually to the Ramban's three spirit of the law overarching mitzvah of Kedushim Tios,
could be, yeah.
Right, but this presentation pushes it in that direction, that, that the Ramban thinks the Rabbanans are this spirit of the law.
It could be, yeah. There is definitely a lot of overlap between the different ways we talk about Ratzon HaTorah, so to speak, and whether they are things that we're personally supposed to perceive, whether things that Chazal perceived, whether they're things that are even considered more than that, considered to be already from the Torah itself. There's different gradations of how it plays out, but it definitely seems to be, no pun intended, in the spirit of that idea. So all of that, like we said, is just to get us to Shabbos. So in the context of Shabbos, it certainly seems that that is the case, that we have different kinds of Yisurim Darabanan when it comes to Shabbos. And that, roughly speaking, there might be a few types, but there's at least two, could be at least maybe three, depending on how you count. But let's start off with two, that there are things which are gezeros, which the rabbis prohibited because we're too likely to be Mechal Shabbos if we did such and such. And there are things which are not gezeros, they're things which are Shabbos problems inherently. And this one could call a malacha derabanan. That's the language. Rav Shechter has an essay about this in the Sefer Tzvi, where he uses that language. That there's two different kinds. Ragachever, I think, uses that language also. If you look in the Rambam, The Rambam, in the beginning of Perek Chaf Aleph of Hilchos Shabbos, he says that right out, that there are two types of things, she'asru chazal, some because they may lead us to an isur skila, and they would bring us to a prohibition, and some because domos, domos l'malachos, that they are similar to malachos. And that seems to be this idea of a malacha, the Rabbanan, is different than a gzera, that in the spirit of what the Torah prohibited as a malacha, so there are things that the rabbis prohibited also that has that status of a malacha d'rabbanan. And there could be differences between a malacha d'rabbanan and a gezeira d'rabbanan, both referencing to Shabbos specifically. This is something which Rav Schechter has an essay about. He presents things a little differently. We'll come back to some of the points he makes, time permitting, but just as a mar makom, it's noteworthy that he has an extensive treatment from some different angles about that distinction and about what differences would be. So one area which is important, and we'll see in a second why it's so important, because it had a backdoor impact on how we understand all of Hilchos Shabbos, has to do with Amira La'akum. We have a prohibition to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for us. And one can ask what category that we've mentioned so far is appropriate for Amira La'akum. If we assume, like the majority of poskim do, that Amira La'akum is an Isser Drabanan, so rabbinic prohibition, that assumption is not universal, but it's going to be important for the next few minutes, so let's work with that assumption. So if Amira La'akum is the rabbinic prohibition, so what category does it fit in? So that seems to be open to interpretation. It seems like the Rambam, in Hilchos Shabbos, the Rambam says that if we start having non-Jews do malacha for us, so we're going to take the whole thing lightly and we'll end up just doing malachas ourselves. So essentially it sounds like it's a gzeira, that though the line between doing a malacha and having somebody else do malacha for us is not too clear, and we're likely going to end up doing a malacha ourselves. So it sounds like it's a gzeira kind of idea. But there are other understandings and what the issue is. It may not be a gzeira, and we'll expand on some of those understandings a little bit later. But it's very significant, because Amira La'akum was at the center of a big chiddush that a lot of achronim had about how the Isra Malacha operates. It was a big idea that many achronim shared, that goes to the heart of the Isra Malacha and affects a lot of details, and it's all going to revolve around what Amira La'akum is doing here. Because a number of Achronim raised the question, I think it was first raised by the Tshuvas Pnei Yeshua. Tshuvas Pnei Yeshua was the grandfather of the Pnei Yeshua, was more well known as a commentary on the Gemara. So the Tshuvas Pnei Yeshua, he raises the question that if we assume that Amira La'akum is Drabanan, so in HaTorah apparently there's nothing wrong with your asking someone who's not obligated in the laws of Shabbos to do a malacha for you. That's what it sounds like. Sounds like the Torah has no problem here. So why not? And if the Torah doesn't want us doing malacha, so why is it okay to get around it by having somebody do malacha on our behalf? It seems to be a direct contradiction to the Ratzon HaTorah. It seems to be maybe at best a technicality, but certainly seems to be very much the wrong thing to do. If the Torah doesn't want writing to take place on Shabbos, why is it okay with my asking a non-Jew to write something? If the Torah doesn't want cooking to happen on Shabbos, why is it okay to ask a non-Jew to cook? Why did the Torah have no objection to this? So a number of achronim, the Beis Meir, prominently the Chassam Sofer, and many others in later generations also, took the understanding that that is very crucial to what the Isra Malacha is. That the Isra Malacha is not about provoking malachos. It's not about making malachos happen. That's not the issue. That the Isra Malacha is that the Jewish person should be at rest. And some connect this to the language of the Aseres HaDibros in Veschanan, where the language of the Torah is Laman Yanuach, that you should be in a state of Menucha. So that's what the Isra Malacha is. And that it happens to be that, yes, Min HaTorah, there isn't really anything wrong with a Jewish person remaining passive and at rest and being the cause of Malachos happening around them. But if you were to instruct people to do Malachos who were not, if there's no Lifnei Iver issue, because it's non-Jewish people who are not subject to the prohibition of Shabbos, not the, when you have a responsibility for anyone else's behavior. If you're going to have other people do malacha, it would not in any way violate the intent of the Torah as far as this is concerned. That's the nature of the issur malacha. And as the Chasam Sofer and others put it, what that essentially means is that the concept of shlichus does not have any place in Hilchos Shabbos. That just doesn't fit with the model of what the issur malacha is, and that can all be derived from this question. So this was a big yesod. It had many nafkaminas, and it was invoked and is invoked because there are many achronim who continue to uphold this principle. And this was an idea that many built on. So far, so good. Everything is clear. Everything makes sense. So Rav Yosef Engel has an essay in his Asman Daraisa where he actually does not like this idea. He explains it differently and then argues on it. He explains it a way that none of the proponents explain it, but he dismisses it after giving his own version. He says that this idea is about the notion that when something is only temporarily prohibited, it can't be inherently bad. It's like we say that, okay, chazer can be inherently bad because it's always off limits. But food on Yom Kippur, you can't say all food is inherently bad. It's only bad one day a year. So then that's not a status that goes to the item itself. This is a concept in general that temporary yisurim cannot be what we call yisurei chatzah, cannot be in the object itself. So Rav Yosef Engel disagrees with that. He thinks there is such a thing as a temporary status isur. But in saying this, he says, that's why they say that when it comes to Shabbos, so you can't tell me that there's anything wrong with Bishul or Zriya or Ksiva, because 6 days a week it's permitted. So there can't be anything inherently bad with these activities. It must be that it's only about the individual. But on Shabbos, the individual is not supposed to be writing and planting and cooking. But there's nothing inherently bad about these activities, and that's what they, and therefore on Shabbos too, it must be the same thing, that if only one day a week it's prohibited, it must be that it's about you doing these things, but these activities are not inherently wrong. And he uses that, which he doesn't like it, but he says that could explain the language of the Mishnah as opposed to the Rambam. When the Mishnah lists the malachos, so the Rambam lists the malachos, he says malachos are charisha, zriya, ksiva, etc., etc. But the Mishnah, Nayin Gimel and Shabbos, it says hazareya, hachoresh, etc. So he says maybe that's pshat, that the reason it's phrased like that is because there's nothing wrong with zriya and charisha and ksira. It's that hazareya, hachoresh, that's the isser, and that's why the Mishnah phrases it that way. Okay, again, he doesn't like it, but he says that could be used to explain it. But it's been invoked in a lot of contexts. For example, it's been invoked to ask the question of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, is that Hutra or Dchuya? We know that we'll be Mechal Shabbos to save a life. So is that what we call Dchuya, that really the Isser is still there, just we have to act to save a life? Or do we say that in these situations there's no Isser in the first place? Whatever nafkaminas that has, a complicated question, whatever nafkaminas it has, that's a general question. So a number of Achronim maintain that if you follow the Chasam Sofer's principle, this is the way the Rav Nassim Gestetner, for example, has like this in his Tshuvas L'Horos Nassim, a few other Svarim have this, that based on the idea that the Surim of Shabbos are not inherent, but they're all about what we're doing. So it's impossible to say that it's mutter to do, but it's still Asur. If it's mutter to do, then it's not Asur. So then it changes the whole status, and therefore that has to be how we view Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, that it's the Hutra and not the Chuya because of that. There's also a lot of other discussions. What about, once upon a time it was about faxes, now it could be about emails or anything else, but about sending a message on Friday afternoon or Motzoi Shabbos into somewhere where it is Shabbos. Is that a problem? So many have discussions about this, and many assumed that Dvar Yoshua, who I'll mention a few times probably, Dvar Yoshua was dying in Tel Aviv a generation ago, Yeshua Menachem Ehrenberg. So he writes that it seems to him clear that it's permissible to send a fax into a time zone that's Shabbos, because the Isser of Shabbos is that you are not at rest when it's Shabbos for you. you're causing a malacha in some other time zone, when you yourself were at rest on Shabbos, you can't be in violation of Shabbos just because you're causing a malacha somewhere else if you personally are at rest over the course of Shabbos. So this yisod has been incorporated into a lot of Piskei Halacha, and it comes up in a few other cases. It's going to be increasingly relevant. If you could do a malacha through a machshava, if you could do a malacha without moving, is that considered to be a violation of Shabbos or not? Does that follow the same parameters as other causational activities? Or maybe Shabbos is inherently all about your being out of a state of rest, and if you're provoking malachas with your mind or something like that, maybe that's not called a malacha. There's a discussion about this, because the pasuk in B'shalach says that when the man came down and they were told to handle the man and take an extra portion on Friday, so the pasuk also says that on Friday, whatever has to be cooked, you should cook. Whatever has to be baked, you should bake. So the commentaries ask on the chumah on the pasuk over there, they ask, well, what do you mean bake and cook before Shabbos? What was involved in preparing the man? Right, the man didn't need any physical impact. You just had to think about whatever you want. You wanted this to be challenged. You wanted this to be baked chicken. So it was. So you can't do that on Shabbos. You can't decide on Shabbos that the man should turn into challenged, should turn into something cooked. So that's a discussion. A lot of Sfarim basically Yakra over there. Others talk about that. That's part of this whole discussion, where exactly that fits in. So this is a big chiddush, a big yisod, which was not minor in terms of its impact on halacha. It's invoked in a lot of halachic discussions, and it really got started. There are other sources for this as well, but it really got started because of this question about Amir al-Akum. How do we relate to the fact that Amir al-Akum is only an Issur d'Rabbanan and Minat Torah it's Mutter? Now, there are those who did not accept this whole principle for whatever reason, and part of it really has to do with the question that we were asking at the beginning, that what about the fact that there could be different kinds of Issurim d'Rabbanan? There are Issurim d'Rabbanan which are inherently fine, but they're too likely to lead to a malacha, so Chazal made a gzera. Or there are Yisurim d'Rabbanan which aren't inherently fine. That's the whole point, that Chazal perceived that it was against the spirit of the Torah, and that's why they assured it. So one could say that Amir al-Akum is really in that category, and then that would have a domino effect on all these other discussions, that one could say that, no, the fact that Chazal assured it doesn't mean that it was totally fine min ha-Torah. It means the opposite. It means that they perceived that it was against what the Torah was getting at, and that's why they assured it. So that is a position some take. The Shulchan Aruch Harav, he sounds like this, for example. And he says that the idea of Amir al-Akum is that we say, even though normally we say there's no shlichus through a non-Jew, and whether this is an issue of shlichus d'var aveir or not is a technical question, but it's basically yesh shlichus l'chumra, that we should assume that on some level, whether it's technically the case or not, but that this person is acting on your behalf, and it's a chil Shabbos on some level. You are causing this malacha to happen, and that is against what the Torah has in mind. So whether it's a shtikl nisr d'raisa, or whether it's that Chazal had to come and put it there, but it represents the fact that this is something that is against the Torah's intent. And that could impact on all of these major nafkaminas that we just saw. Question about that?
Can you distinguish in that case if one kind of Issur d'Rabbanan is to bring you to do a malacha?
Oh, 100%. That's the thing. So we need to, 100%, that's, we have to figure out where does Amir al-Akum fit in? Because seeing it one way leads to one understanding, and seeing it another way might be the opposite understanding. So, for example, Rav Zevin, in his fascinating Sefer Lor HaLacha, so he has an essay on Shabbos, where he essentially takes that position. He thinks that the whole yisod of some sofer and others is incorrect, and that there really is a inherent issue with having malacha take place, and that Amir al-Akum doesn't disprove that, it proves it. That's essentially the message of Amir al-Akum. It's interesting how this comes up in a few other contexts. So part of what we're seeing here is we don't know what to make of the fact that something is mutter min ha-Torah and asr mid rabbanan. Where is the real ratzon ha-Torah to be found? And maybe there's not one answer. Maybe it depends. Sometimes the ratzon ha-Torah is to be found in looking at the isser without the rabbanan, and sometimes it's the opposite, that the rabbanan really completes the picture of what is the Ratzon HaTorah. So there's another example of this that had a role in this discussion also. There is the fact that the Gemara in Chulin and Daf Kuf Yudalad, the Gemara tells us that Min HaTorah, Maisa Shabbos is Mutter. That something that was done through a Malacha on Shabbos, we're permitted to get Hana from it. It's an Issa D'Rabbanan, as we know, that comes up all the time. There's an Issa D'Rabbanan of Maisa Shabbos, but Min HaTorah, it is permissible, and the Gemara sees that over there from a pasuk from the language of Kodesh, that he Kodesh, Vein Maseh Kodesh. So Shabbos is Kodesh, but the things that take place on Shabbos are not Kodesh in that sense of being off limits. So here it's particularly hard to know what to focus on, because you could say there's 3 points. On the one hand, there's a Gemara. The Gemara quotes a pasuk, which is telling us a chiddush, and then there's a din d'rabbanan on top of that. So, do we look at our havamina before the pasuk, where you would have thought that ma'aser Shabbos is aser? Do we look at the impact of the pasuk, which tells us that no, he kodesh vein ma'aser kodesh, so ma'aser Shabbos is mutter? Or do we look at the final din d'rabbanan, where ma'aser Shabbos becomes aser again? So, which of those 3 points of entry is most reflective of what the real Isser of Shabbos is? Because the Shaul LeMeshiv, one of his many trillions of tshuvas, the Shaul LeMeshiv has a tshuva about this, where he says he thinks this Gemara is a knockout proof against the Beis Meir he was quoting, against the Chassam Sofer, against this principle. He says it can't be, they have to be wrong because of this Gemara. Because if you say that the Isser Malacha is only about what you're doing, and it's not about the action being inherently bad. So in his mind, he thought this was absolute proof. He says, how could you have a havamina that the result would be usr? If there's nothing bad about cooking, it's just you're not supposed to be the one cooking. So how could you have a havamina that the product of that action, the cooked food, would be usr? So the fact that you need a pasuk to come and tell you that it's mutter, that shows you that you had a havamina be iser, and the havamina, that's the real Ratzon HaTorah, that, and this is a chiddush, that the havamina is that it's aser, and therefore it can't be like the Chassam Sofer. So I still have to explain then the question about Amir Lakum. So then if that's true, so how come in HaTorah it's mutter to ask someone to do malacha for you? So he has a different approach. He says that's about malachas machshavas. That the idea of malachas machshavas tells us you have to have the malachas and the machshavas in one place. And here, if you have somebody else do a malacha for you, so he's doing the malachas, you're doing the machshavas. So that's a technical exemption. But
the Bris Yaakov, I think, says the opposite. Right? He says the smach for Real enough, is that
that's your machshava? Your machshava,
right,
being carried
out. It's a kiyum of your machshava. Yeah. It's melech and machshava. You see how, as it were, you know.
Right, so you see how flexible some of these things are. But he was a Sholomesh, was a great gadol hador. He was very sure, but he said this is the only way to see. You know that this gemara shows you that the holy sod is wrong, and that that's the issue with shlichus. So it's interesting. There's a tshuva about this in the Dvar Yoshua. We mentioned him before. So he assumes that essentially says that Chazal, when they came and they made Maaser Shabbos Aser, so you could ask, how are they allowed to do that? There is a Taz, which is so prominently quoted, that Rav David Cohn, he wrote a whole sefer about this called the famous Taz. The Taz Hayadu, this is the most quoted Taz. So what is this Taz? That the Taz says that if something is explicit in the Torah, and apparently it has to be not even that explicit, but it's somewhat direct in the Torah, so then Chazal have no authority to prohibit it. They can only prohibit that which is not explicit in the Torah. So it says, if the Gemara is coming to say that Maaser Shabbos is mutter, and it's a pasuk which is teaching us that Maaser Shabbos is mutter, said, how could Chazal come and prohibit it? Isn't that against the Taz? So his approach is that it's not that they prohibited Maaser Shabbos directly. It's that they added on another level to Shabbos through their legislation. That Min HaTorah, it was like the Chassam Sofer and the Beis Meir, that Shabbos is only about us being at rest. But Chazal added the layer that the environment should be at rest, that you should not be provoking malachos either. So once they added that, so then there were certain implications that just were memela, that just flowed from that. So Maaser Shabbos became prohibited also as a result of the new aspect of Shabbos that they added on, but it wasn't a matter of direct legislation against that which was permitted by the Torah. It's very interesting because they also bring a proof. So, for example, one of the points that Rav Zevin makes is that we're not allowed to make Havdalah on a candle that was lit on Shabbos. Gemara says in Brachos, even if it was lit by a non-Jew, it was lit by Heter, he has a right to light a candle on Shabbos. But we're not allowed to make a Havdalah on that candle, Shloshavas Mimalechas Daver, that it was not Shomer Shabbos, this candle, so we can't use it for Havdalah. What do you mean it wasn't Shomer Shabbos? It wasn't lit as a consequence of a malacha. It was lit by somebody who wasn't obligated in Shabbos. So that seems to be a proof against the Chassam Sofer and the Beis Meir, etc. So Dvar Yeshua talks about that. And the Shuvah says that's Drabbanan. That's a part of the new, that the Gemara doesn't mean that's a Din Min HaTorah. That's a Din Mid Drabbanan. That's a part of the element that Chazal added on. But Min HaTorah and Achanami, there wouldn't have been anything wrong with it. Rav Zevin has an interesting point also that this is solid, that somebody raised the objection to his approach that there is a machlokas. It's really a machlokas, the Ran and the Rashba, but they focus on the lenient view of the Rashba in this question, that if somebody accepted Shabbos already and his neighbor did not accept Shabbos, so is he allowed to ask his Jewish neighbor to do malacha for him when he himself has accepted Shabbos? So this is machlokas, has implications for the whole Yontif Sheni, Eretz Yisrael issue. It's also part of that discussion. But so the Rashba's view was, you can ask this person to do malacha for you. So says, doesn't that show that there's no shlichus, essentially, that it's okay to have somebody do malacha for you? So Rav Zevin responded to that in a very solid way. He says, no, that's talking about Tosefah Shabbos, the person brought in Shabbos early. So then, of course, it's only about you. But once Shabbos starts for everyone, so then that's a different story. But when you personally bring in Shabbos before it starts, so then that memela has to only affect your behavior. And then, okay, so it makes sense to say you can ask your neighbor to do something. But once Shabbos actually sets in for everyone, so then that would be a different story.
The same issues come in the yeshiva. There are Yemenai that can put things, they come to the Rambam, in the Bishul.
So that's an interesting question also. That's an interesting question also when something is a matter of different halachic opinion. That opens up all kinds of other interesting issues. That has other elements to it. But let's assume we all agree on everything, and it's just a question of I brought in Shabbos and you didn't. So can I ask you to do something if we both agree that it would be usher on Shabbos, but you just don't, you haven't started Shabbos yet, so what does that say? Can you be my shliach to do something? Can I make you my shliach to do this action because it's not Shabbos for you? So some thought this shows you that there's no concept of shlichus on Shabbos, like the Chassam Sofer and others. And Rav Zevin's response would be that, no, in Tosefah Shabbos that's true. That when you bring in Shabbos for yourself, so then by its very nature it's only about you. But when everyone brings it in, when it's already Shabbos objectively, that's a different story. So this had a major impact on all of these questions. So this major issue of what is the nature of the Issur Malacha on Shabbos is all very much going to be impacted by the question of how we understand the Dinim Drabbanan of Shabbos. And a Din Drabbanan like Amir Lakum, does it show us one thing or does it show us the opposite? Does it show us that the nature of the Malacha is one way, or that it's actually the opposite and that Chazal were reflecting what the mitzvah is about when they made their rule? So this affects a number of other things also. So you mentioned Rav Shechter has a few applications of the Malacha Drabbanan, Gzeir Drabbanan in the Sefer. So one point that he notes is, let's say, for example, something like a Malacha Kala'achar Yad, that if you do a Malacha in an unusual way, so what is that? Is that going to be a Gzeir Drabbanan, or is that going to be a Malacha Drabbanan? So there he assumes that the issue is it's not called machshavas. Why that is, how you define machshavas, the whole other fascinating discussion, but he assumes that it's not called machshavas. And then he makes the assumption, which also you could talk about, that if it's not machshavas, it can't be a malacha. So if it's not a malacha, so then it's got to be a gzeira. So then that's going to be treated as a gzeira, and it's going to have whatever details will apply to that. But a little more complicated is something like a malacha shenitzricha legufa. And that, there's evidence that there's interpretations in both directions, that when you do a malacha that is a malacha, but it's for a different purpose, we call it malacha shenitzricha legufa, so is that lacking in the definition of a malacha? In which case, the fact that we prohibit it means it would have to be a gezeira. Or is it not necessarily lacking, in which case you could say the other way, that really it's still a violation of the essence of the malacha, it's just not technically prohibited min ha-Torah, and it will have probably greater chumrah to it for the most part. In general, this also affects, and this is something Rav Schechter discussed in a slightly different way, but we'll say it a little bit differently, but we know that we say, ein gozrin gezeira l'gezeira, that we don't make double gezeiras. So we don't have one gezeira on top of the other. But when it comes to, let's say, amir l'akum, so we don't use that language fully. So when do we allow amir l'akum? So very often, the calculation, you have shvus to shvus b'mokom mitzvah, we say. Right? If you have two drabanans together, and it's a mokom mitzvah, or maybe it's a chola, or maybe a great hefsid, or whatever it is, so then we're lenient. So why do we have to say like that? Why don't we just say gzeira l'gzeira is just a mutter in the first place? We don't. When you say gzeira l'gzeira, you don't need a makom mitzvah or a chola or something else. We say gzeira l'gzeira lo gazrinam. So why is it sometimes we say gzeira l'gzeira just doesn't even exist in the first place? And sometimes we say, oh, it's a shvus to shvus, so if we have something else together with it, we have a mitzvah or a chola, whatever it is, so then we'll allow it. What's the difference? So it seems like the difference is, what are we talking about? Are we talking about two things which are just gezeros, meaning that they don't have any inherent negativity to them? There's nothing wrong about them by themselves. The issue is that they might lead to something else. So then we could say, all right, we have a policy, we don't make a double fence, and each action by itself is neutral. And we only need one fence. So then we don't build one fence on top of the other. So then that's heter gomer. That's totally okay. But when you're dealing with two dinam drabanan that are not gezeiras, or maybe even if just one of the two is not a gezeira, but it is something which really is a Shabbos problem, just it's something Chazal had to introduce us to, so then you could say that it's not that when you combine the two, there's no problem. It's that each one, and maybe it's a double problem, each one has a little bit of a Shabbos aspect to it. And when it's a step removed, okay, it's a step removed, but there's still something there. So all we've done is we've weakened it. We haven't eliminated it. So if we've weakened it, okay, so it's more susceptible to being overridden by something like a mitzvah or something like that. But it's not like a gzeira li gzeira where it's nothing. Another point that Rav Schechter makes, and makes us often in the halacha, is that, so to go back to this whole idea that a malacha has to be something that you are actively doing. So we were discussing this all from the Chassam Sofer and the Beis Meir and all of the proof from Amir al-Akum. So Rav Schechter mentions this point without any of this. He has a Rashi that sounds like that, but he works off the initial assumption that a malacha has to be active. Says this would not necessarily be true about a gezeira on Shabbos. That a gezeira could be passive. You could violate a gezeira passively, which is ironic because it makes the drabanan more machmir in a sense than the daraisa. We're saying to be a malacha daraisa, if you were completely passive, then that might not be a problem. It might not be a malacha. But in a drabanan, it could be that would still be a problem. So, for example, this comes up. There is a chakira of Rabbi Kiva Eger's, which is often quoted, about the isser of mekach u'memkar on Shabbos. We're not allowed to make a kinyan on Shabbos. So Rabbi Kiva Eger has a safek. What happens if you make a kinyan, and you make the kinyan on Friday with the intent, this happens all the time in modern commerce, you have deals like this all the time, let's say somebody makes the transaction on Friday with the intention that it should take place on Shabbos. So does that violate the Isser Kinyan if you did all the actual discussion and transaction before Shabbos, but that it should take place on Shabbos? So you could say, well, how does that question get off the ground? That if you are, if you're not doing anything, if you're going to be asleep on Shabbos when this kinyan happens, so we just said that you can't, we said earlier that you can't have a malacha when you're not active. So why should it be a problem to have this kinyan take place on Shabbos if you completely are mesiach das from it? You do everything on Friday, so why should it be a problem? So it may not be a problem, depends how you land on this whole issue, but why is it even a possibility? Because what is the issur of kinyan on Shabbos? It's a gezeirah. The concern is you're going to come to right, shema yichtov. So it could be that gezeirahs are not defined by malacha rules. So a malacha, yeah, you have to be active. But a gezeirah you could violate maybe even passively. And maybe that's why there's what to talk about, that a kinyan could be an issur on Shabbos. Or he also understands, for example, when it comes to the issur refuah, so let's say you were to have an akum treat you in a way that would be usur on Shabbos midinei refuah. So he assumes the Negle Tal like this, the Avni Nezer, and as I say, for Negle Tal has this position, that that doesn't help at all. That if there's a, if the problem is the issur refuah, then having an akum do it does not change anything, because you're still the one violating it even passively. If he's doing it to you, so you're the one violating the gzeira, and that's also a part of this idea, the assumption being that refuah is a gzeira, and that the gzeira you could violate passively too, and the akum doesn't change anything here. So that's going to be still a violation. So that's a fascinating idea, which again just reflects the fact that there might be differences between these two categorizations. So now just to bring it closer to home, so you're learning muktzah. So where does muktzah fit into this whole discussion? So it could be one or the other or a third possibility, which the third possibility may really link up. So the Rambam in the 24th parak of Hilchos Shabbos, which I'm sure you must have spoken about on day one, right? So the Rambam gives his reasons for muktzah and the end of Parak Chaf Dalet, and together with the Ravid, there's four reasons. He gives three reasons, and the Ravid gives a fourth reason. So they would seem to line up in different ways. So is the issue, like the Ravid says, like the Gemara sounds, that it's a gzeira mishum tiltel, mishum hotzah, tiltel is a gzeira mishum hotzah, so then it's a gzeira. Or like one of the Rambam's three reasons, that it's a concern you may come to use the malacha that it's made for, so then again it's a gzeira. But the Rambam's other two reasons are interesting. Either that Chazal perceived that everything should be different on Shabbos, so your tiltel should also be different. So that sounds more like the other category, except that it's noteworthy that if you look at Halacha Aleph in that parak, so the Rambam seems to say there's a third category, and maybe it's really similar, but the language the Rambam is, in the beginning of that parak, says there are things that Chazal asurd, even though they neither are likely to bring you to a malacha, or are doma to a malacha. So it sounds like it's neither of those two, but they're in the spirit of what the Pasuk says in Yeshayahu about Misochevtecha v'davar davar, that there's this added level of concern for Shabbos and these kind of activities, which really seems like it's similar to the idea of Doma l'malacha, but on a different level. If you had to group it with one of the two, you'd group it there, except the Rambam is basically saying it's a third category. And that would seem to affect things. So where does muktzah fall into this whole discussion? It seems like there's an open range of possibilities just within the Rambam's own words, and together with the Ravid also, that there's a number of possibilities. So just to quickly say maybe some footnotes to this, if we have a few more minutes. So just on that point, and while we're talking about that Rambam, so just as a footnote, Rav Shechter used that Rambam to explain the surprising position of the Rambam about Kiddush, that the Rambam is the minority view that most Rishonim hold, like the Gemara sounds like, that Tosefes Shabbos is a Chiyuv Daraisa, according to most Rishonim, to start Shabbos early. And then there's a whole question, okay, so does that mean that it's actually Shabbos or something else? But the Rambam, according to those who say, let's say it's a Chiyuv Daraisa, and it's actually Shabbos, so we can understand, okay, you can make Kiddush during that time also. But it would seem like if it's not actually Shabbos, then you shouldn't be able to make Kiddush that time. So the Rambam's position is difficult because the Gemara says black on white, and Maseches Brachos say you can make Kiddush while it's still light outside. And the Rambam does not acknowledge Tosefos Shabbos at all. He doesn't talk about it in Mishneh Torah. So there are some who believe that he holds it's Darabanan, Tosefos Shabbos Darabanan, and the others, among those that Kalim, they say he doesn't talk about it at all, so it's possible he doesn't have the whole concept. Because when the Gemara talks about it in the context of Yom Kippur, the Rambam brings that. The Rambam brings that there is Tosefes Inui on Yom Kippur. There's a mitzvah Menat Torah to start the fast of Yom Kippur early, but he doesn't talk about it by Shabbos or Yontif or even by the Issur Melacha on Yom Kippur. So maybe he doesn't have the whole idea. So they ask, okay, so if he holds it's Rabbanan, or worse, he holds it's nothing, so how does he deal with the Gemara that says that that you can make Kiddush before it's actually dark outside? So Schechter explains, based on a point of Rav Soloveitchik, that he thinks it goes together with this Rambam. The Rambam here about Muksa. That when the Rambam tells us that there has to be a Shvisa Hanikaris, that it's not enough just to abstain from Malacha, because it could be that we don't have anything to do. It could be that we're just bored. So we're not going to do any Malacha on Shabbos. Rav Soloveitchik once gave an interview to the commentator many years ago, where he said that when he first came to Boston, there were very few people who didn't work on Shabbos. And among those who didn't work on Shabbos, most of them were octogenarians. They didn't work on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday either. So if you don't know what the word octogenarian means, you might think it's a special religion where they have Shabbos every day of the week. But it means they have people who were retired, so they didn't work all week, so they didn't work on Shabbos also. So it wasn't nicker that Shabbos was anything different. So that's what the Rambam's saying here. It's possible somebody just may not have any malachos to do. So we need something to make Shabbos clear. So moving things around in a different way makes a shvisa hanikaris. So he explained also that that's what he thinks Kiddush is. That Kiddush is uniquely linked to the malachos of Shabbos, and that the point of Kiddush is you're making an announcement, and that you're declaring that I am abstaining from malacha for the next 25 hours, not because I have nothing to do, but because it's an intentional religious decision. It is, that's what this Kiddush is for. So within that, he said Kiddush doesn't have to be on Shabbos. Kiddush has to be near the beginning of Shabbos, either soon after or even soon before. It doesn't have to be exactly on Shabbos itself. If one were to make Kiddush Friday afternoon, so maybe it's not Shabbos in any sense of the word, but it would still be effective for the mitzvah of Kiddush because it would be an announcement about what's coming up in these next 25 hours. All right, so there's a lot more to say, but not much more time, so maybe we'll just review. So we spoke about the question of the general concept of Dinam Darabanan in the world, that the Rambam sees it all as Lo Sasser, the Ramban disagrees for a bunch of reasons, also how can we distinguish between Daraisas and Rabbanan in terms of Chumra and Kula. So the question is, if you don't like the Rambam, so what do you like? So some say that the Ramban was working off of when Chazal were able to perceive within the Torah that there are other ideas that are also desired by the Torah, so that's where they brought in the Dinam Darabanan. And this is affected by the whole question of Asmachta. Is Asmachta simply an association the rabbis added later, or like the Ritva and the Meshachachm and the Maral, is it something more than that? Three different ways of saying how it's more, but is it something more than just a later association? And also the relationship here between Lo Sasser and Ushmarti, Mishma Shmarti, we spoke about. So when it comes to Shabbos specifically, one could say that this creates two different ways of looking at things, that some things are inherently neutral, but Chazal asked it because they are fulfilling the idea of Asu Siag LaTorah, they're making a Gzeira, and some things are not inherently neutral, they're inherently bad, it's just the Torah didn't spell it out, but Chazal saw that they were in the same spirit as whatever the Torah was prohibiting, and that's where they came to make their legislation. So we discussed the question of Amir Lakum, and that could be understood both ways, and how you understand it affects things, because many Achronim built a big palace on the idea that Amir Lakum shows you that Menah Torah there's no shlichus, that Torah view of malacha is only that you should be at rest, and provoking a malacha is not in any way a violation of the spirit of the Torah, which is invoked in a lot of halachic discussions, such as, for example, the status of refuah on Shabbos, of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, such as the question of sending faxes or emails into other time zones, such as doing malacha passively, like with your mind or with a robot or with whatever else, and all of these issues are in all these, the poskim in all these cases invoke this yisod. And one could say the opposite, as Rav Zevin does, that Mir Lakum doesn't show you that there's nothing wrong with it. Mir Lakum Dafka shows you there is something wrong with it, and that's why Chazal asked it. And we discussed also the implications of the Gemara about Maisa Shabbos, where we find that the Havmin apparently was that it was Aser, the Maskana was as Mutter, and then the Dindra Rabbana was as Aser again. So the Sholem Eishah thought that was very, very consequential for this. And we talked about that, and we talked about the Dvar Yoshua, who says that the Chazal just added another layer to what Shabbos means, and Maisa Shabbos flowed from that naturally, and that's why it wasn't a problem with the Taz's rule that they can't prohibit something which is Mutter Min HaTorah. And talked about other implications about that, about the Gemara, about not making Havdalah on a candle that was lit on Shabbos, and how that also was affected by this. So then, assuming this distinction exists, mentioned a few of Rav Shechter's points, that Kalach HaYad has to be only a Gzeira because it's inherently not a Malacha, and the Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa is subject to different implications, whether it is a Malacha D'Rabbanan or a Gzeira D'Rabbanan, and that there are nafkaminas such as this idea that you can't violate a Malacha passively, but maybe a Gzeira you can violate passively, so maybe Kinyan you can violate passively according to that possibility, and the Rebbe Akiva Eiger about a Kinyan made on Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos, to take place on Shabbos, or maybe refuah, if you're going to have a non-Jew treat you with refuah, maybe that's still a violation of the Gzeira, etc., etc. We talked about the difference between Gzeira L'Gzeira and Shvus L'Shvus, how Gzeira L'Gzeira is just Mutter, and Shvus L'Shvus, we need extra reasons to be Mekel, because maybe Gzeira L'Gzeira dealing with two things that are inherently neutral, and they just are there for protective reasons, so you don't need a double protection, that's completely okay. But Shvus L'Shvus, you're dealing with at least one or two things which are inherently bad, and we weaken them when we make them a step away, but we don't necessarily kill it completely, and that's why you need other factors to come in and to affect things. And that was most of what we spoke about. Added a word about then we have to figure out how this applies to Muksa. So Muksa, we see essentially four different reasons, which either could fit into the Gzeira idea, as two of them sound like, or could fit into the Doma L'Malach idea, or it sounds a little bit like the Rambam is really introducing a third category in that parak of what is Dabar Dover coming to convey to us, but that seems a little bit like it's the second category of Doma L'Malach. It would probably be grouped with that, and we just mentioned also how that Rambam was invoked by Rav Shechter to explain the idea that Kiddush, according to the Rambam, apparently can be made when it's not yet Shabbos, because it's a fulfillment of Shvisa HaNikaris, that it's the announcement that the Malachas are intentional. I think we're just about on schedule, so I thank you all very much. Hope that made some degree of sense. Shkai. And as you know, Rabbi Trichina and I go way, way back, and you're all very, very fortunate to have such two distinguished Rosh Hashanah. And I wish Rabbi Ziering tremendous hatzlacha in his next step. And
in any case, in case anyone does not realize it, he's been doing this for a very long time in that same way.
It just feels very long.
That was a point. No. But we sat on a bus. We were in Karen B'Yavne together. We went to an Achi Shabbaton. And okay, you did the same thing you just did now. You did for 2 hours on the bus. Straight. Gulf War. Well, that was the Gulf War year.
That was the Gulf War year. Anyway, so you have a big... That was 1990.
Yeah.
1991. War ended in
1990. Yeah, the topic was Simchas Yontov, as I recall.
Well, in any event, you're all very fortunate to have wonderful, wonderful leaders here, and should only continue to be matzliach in all ways.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Shukalach.